A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Today's episode has been sponsored by Jay McLaughlin. Jay McLaughlin is a timeless lifestyle brand with incredible style and a spirit of connection. I am obsessed with Jay McLaughlin and have been so honored that they are sponsoring my Zibbyverse tour. It just so happens that the tour goes to so many communities and areas of the country that have Jay McLaughlin stores. And I love that the brand is philanthropic through Jay McLaughlin's local and loyal programming. Host store events to give back to organizations that are meaningful to Jay McLaughlin's local communities. I also love the fact that the clothes are just so chic. They make me feel polished and modern, and the best part is that most of the line comes in fabrics that don't wrinkle. I especially love the dresses, the cashmere sweaters, the other sweaters. You'll see them all over my Instagram. I typically tag at Jay McLaughlin, and so you can check it out. It is absolutely one of my favorite brands, and I am over the moon excited to be working with them. In fact, I want to share the love with all of you. Jay McLaughlin is giving 20% off new customers and listeners of my podcast with special code ZIBBY20, capital ZIBBY 20. That's 20% off for new customers and listeners of the podcast with special code capital ZIBBY20. Take advantage of it today. My favorites are this white, open, long cashmere sweater that I've been wearing on every flight that I've taken on this tour. I have a blue with light blue horizontal striped sweater, several dresses I even wore on Good Morning America. Check it out, Jay McLaughlin. Thanks so much.
Hi, I'm Zibby Owens, the creator and host of the award-winning podcast that you're listening to right now, thank you so much, called Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books. It is a daily podcast, 365 days a year, and each day we talk to an author about all of the things related to their career, their book, their life, and more in 30 minutes or less, because who has time? I am now an author myself, although I wasn't when I started this podcast, and you can get my new memoir, Bookends, a memoir of love, loss, and literature, wherever books are sold starting July 1st, and my children's book, Princess Charming. You can learn more about me at ZibbyOwens.com, but really, you're here to learn more about the authors, and that is what we're going to do. Also, be sure to check out all the other podcasts in the Zcast Podcast Network. You can learn more at ZCastNetwork.com and definitely check out those shows as well. Geraldine Brooks is the author of Horse, a novel. Australian-born Geraldine is an author and journalist who grew up in the western suburbs of Sydney. She attended Bethlehem College, Asheville, and the University of Sydney. She worked as a reporter for the Sydney Morning Herald. She won the George Shackleton Australian News Correspondent Scholarship, and she was a journalism master's program attendee at Columbia University in New York City. She worked for the Wall Street Journal. She covered the Gulf War, where she got an Overseas Press Club Award along with her husband, Tony Horowitz, and then was awarded the Pulitzer Prize in Fiction in 2006 for her novel March. Her novels People of the Book, Caleb's Crossing, and The Secret Chord all were New York Times bestsellers. Her first novel, Year of Wonders, is an international bestseller, translated into more than 25 languages and currently optioned for a limited series by Olivia Colman's production company. She is the author of the nonfiction works Nine Parts of Desire, Foreign Correspondence, and The Idea of Home. Brooks married fellow journalist and author Tony Horowitz in Tourette-sur-Loup, France, in 1984, and were together until his sudden death in 2019, which we talked about They have two sons, Nathaniel and Bizu. She now lives with a dog named Bear and a mare named Valentine by an old mill pond on Martha's Vineyard and spends as much time as she can in Australia. In 2016, she was named an officer in the Order of Australia. Welcome, Geraldine. Thank you so much for coming on Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books to discuss your beautiful and amazing new book called Horse.
Well, it's great to be here.
I just was blown away by not only the writing of it, but the intersection of all the stories and how the whole plot unfolded the whole way through and how you were able to get us to attach to characters in the present day, but also go on this sort of mystery hunt for how this painting came to be in the world and then tie everything together. It was bravo.
Well, thank you. Thank you. You know, it wasn't clear to me how it was all going to come together. I had to sort of pick away at the stitching bit by bit and just take it on trust that eventually I would find how these stories were going to connect. But it took quite a long time into the writing to get to that point. So I was kind of hanging by my fingernails there.
And here I thought you had it all figured out from the first minute. So
no.
Would you mind telling listeners who aren't familiar with Horse yet, what inspired you to write it and generally what it's about?
Okay, so I became horse crazy in my mid-50s. This was the direction my midlife crisis took. And I got a horse, and it was fairly comical because I didn't know what I was doing. But in any case, it became all I wanted to think about was this horse and learning to ride and learning about horse care. And I wasn't getting any actual writing done. And then luckily, I just happened to be at a lunch at Plymouth Pawtuxet Museum, and there was an official from the Smithsonian there, and he was regaling the table with the story of how he'd just delivered the skeleton of the most famous racehorse of the 19th century from an attic in Natural History Museum in Washington to the International Museum of the Horse in Kentucky. And as he told the story of this horse's incredible career and then what happened to it during the Civil War, my lunch was uneaten. I'm leaning forward, and I knew that I had my next book and that it would unite my new passion with actual productive labor. So it saved the family finances.
Wow. First of all, did you get to see the skeleton?
Oh, yes. I went to Kentucky and, you know, did a lot of research there about horses and horse breeding and foals and all the things that I needed to know. But I also went to the Smithsonian in Washington, where they have the laboratory that preps bones for scientific study. So that was such an extraordinary research experience, because the Smithsonian, the museums that you see on the mall, they're just the tip of the iceberg. And out in suburban Maryland, there is this miles of campus where they have scientific research labs and storage pods for 98% of the collections that they keep out there. So it's a chamber of treasures and scientific wonders, and it was just terrific to be there.
I've spent a lot of time at the Museum of Natural History with all my kids doing classes there and everything else, and I've had the opportunity to go back and see some of, you know, the stockpile, and you realize how vast, hearing about their collection, and it's just insane how much material and history is stored there and offsite, and it's just amazing.
And how much science that they're doing there too.
Yes.
I was researching, you know, this is a multi-stranded novel, and it's about science, and it's about a racehorse, and it's about art as well. So I was researching how they would clean a painting, and as well as how they clean bones, which is actually done by a room full of domestic beetles that just eat the bones clean, which is when it's surrounded by all this high-tech scientific equipment, but that's still the best way that they've come up with to clean bones.
Wow. Well, your novel, yes, is about a racehorse, but also about race and how that factors into everything. I felt like it was hard to know reading if you were Black or not Black as an author, because the experience that you gave to Theo and his whole, even the littlest things, like how He trains himself, and Theo is one of the main characters in the present storyline, when he gets these microaggressions sort of hurled his way that he can, you can see the flash of anger, but then he just like gets right over it and moves on.
That he's learned that he, you know, for his own safety and well-being, he has to appear to get over it.
Yes, I'm sorry, I misspoke. Yeah. Yes. I meant on externally, the face. He changed his face to mask quickly. And you see this obviously through to the end, which I won't say anything, but you know, how did you get into his character? Were you at all worried about writing from the point of view of a different race from your own? And tell me about that.
Yeah, no, I was terrified actually, because you know, I'm very aware of the discourse about writing outside of your own identity. But if I was going to write this book, because the Black Horseman was so absolutely fundamental to the success of Lexington and to the thoroughbred industry in the 19th century, their skills and expertise were plundered because most of these people were enslaved or formerly enslaved by white owners who drew immense prestige and material wealth from their thoroughbreds, because racing in the 19th century was huge. It's hard to overstate what a national passion it was, and it crossed class lines, it crossed racial lines, but it was built on the skills of Black horsemen, and I couldn't leave them out of the story. They were fundamental to the story. So once you're telling that story, you can't then, if you're going to have a story that comes into the present time, which I wanted to do around the science, you can't just pretend that that all stopped in the 19th century and that racism is over and done with. So I knew I was going to have to engage with it in the present storyline as well. So I relied on the absolute generosity and forbearance of Black friends who shared their experiences and who read early drafts and said, that's crap. And and you need to do this and you need to do that. And they were just, you know, I couldn't have written this book without them. And I know how tiring it is to always be explaining our own racism, explaining racism to white people. So I was just really grateful. But living here at Martha's Vineyard, there's been a Black community coming here in the summers for more than a century. So I'm lucky that I've got to know so many interesting people here. And what I've learned is that no amount of education or affluence is going to protect you if your skin is Black. And the most famous example is Professor Henry Louis Gates, who's a summer resident here. And I think we all remember when he was dragged off his own porch in Cambridge and in handcuffs for committing the offense of trying to open his own front door.
Unbelievable and crazy. And I feel like you did such a wonderful job of putting the reader in Theo's shoes and letting us live life like that, changing everyone's vantage point into it. So I thought that was wonderful.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
This message is sponsored by Greenlight. As kids get older, some things about parenting can get easier. I mean, not many, but some. But others don't, like having conversations about money. Point is, kids won't really know how to manage their money unless they're actually in charge of it. And that is where Greenlight can help. Greenlight is a debit card and money app made for families. Parents can send money to their kids and keep an eye on their kids' spending and saving while kids and teens build money confidence and lifelong financial literacy skills. With the Greenlight app, kids can learn how to save, invest, and spend wisely thanks to games that teach money skills in a fun and accessible way. I got Greenlight debit cards for my kids. The greatest thing, you can actually add their photos that take up half the card. So when I handed the cards to the kids, they were like, this is so exciting. So they look great. Unfortunately, I only put the required 2 cents on at the beginning to make sure they worked. So the kids were like, well, what should I spend my 2 cents on? Anyway, millions of parents and kids are learning about money on Greenlight. It's the easy, convenient way for parents to raise financially smart kids and families to navigate life together. Sign up for Greenlight today and get your first month free when you go to greenlight.com/Zibby. That's greenlight.com/Zibby to try Greenlight for free. Greenlight.com/Zibby.
Wonderful. I also, I love how Jess sees people now in terms of how their bones are put together. Like the comment she made early on to Theo about, oh, well, you must be able to run very well. Look at the mechanics of your legs. You know, I'm like, wow, maybe there's a reason why I'm not a great runner. You know, it's not my willpower. It's my short legs. What are you going to do? So I want Jess to like give me some sort of excuse.
Well, it was fun. It was fun creating Jess because I had so much research to do on the other characters that I thought I'd give myself a break and base her on me. So she's socially awkward, nerdy person. And she just loves the interior architecture of living things. So that's why she works in osteopreparation at the Smithsonian. She's just wonderful at articulating bones. So they show what the creature was like when it was alive. And so, yes, so when she looks at people, she's always seeing through the flesh to the bones, and she's very impressed by people who have excellent rotational ability.
Oh, I love that. It's like, leave it to a good book to have you look at the world differently, even just joints. I was hoping to read this one paragraph from the afterword, if that's okay with you. You said, I started this novel with the encouragement of my husband, Tony Horowitz, the true historian in the family. He hadn't been crazy about my previous novelistic plunge into myth and biblical history, but thoroughly embraced my engagement with a more recent period he knew and loved. Often, a pertinent article or a promising source he had ferreted out would land on my desk. Together with Bizu, we traveled to Kentucky, where our research often intersected in intriguing ways as he followed the trail of Frederick Law Olmsted for his book, Spying on the South. Back home, Tony's quips would keep me on task if I procrastinated. Doesn't look like horse is galloping to the finish line today. Tony died suddenly on book tour, not long after speaking to an enthusiastic audience at the Filson in Louisville, my partner in love and life. I miss him every day. Oh, I am so sorry.
Yeah, no, it's been a tough 3 years, really. And, you know, the first year I was just in shock and disbelief because we didn't know that he had anything wrong with his heart. And he was a gym rat. He went to the gym maybe 6 times a week. And he, this was probably, in retrospect, not very good for his heart. He used to get on the machines and watch Fox News to get revved up. He hated Fox News so much. And so, anyway, he was very fit, and it was just a total shock for me and the boys. So it's still clawing our way back, you know.
How is it trying to throw yourself into a massive intellectual project and finishing that while going through grief?
Yeah, at first I couldn't focus at all. But eventually the book became the lifeboat that I crawled into because I got some advice from a friend who had recently lost her husband, and she got the advice from Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who had said, do your work. It might not be your best work, but it'll be good work, and it'll be what saves you. Mm. And it turned out it was, and, you know, because Tony liked this idea so much, and he'd been so instrumental in helping me with the research in the early stages of it, So I wanted to do as good of a job on it as I could, because it was our last thing that we would be able to do together.
And so you wrote from the heart the scenes with grief, that there were scenes involving grief on a macro level, and maybe you were channeling that, or was that already all written?
No, all of that came later. So yeah, it affected the book. It affected the trajectory of the story immensely.
And how do you go forward from here? What are the things you tell yourself when you're having like really tough days? And we don't have to talk about this anymore.
Yeah, no, I rely on, you know, I've become maniacal about work. I used to be a procrastinator, and, you know, I'd go out in the garden to prune one little branch that was bugging me, and I'd still be out there 4 hours later. But I've just found that I want to be immersed in writing right now. It does seem to be the thing that helps the most.
And how did you meet him originally?
How did I meet Tony? At graduate school, we were both coming to Columbia University from other jobs. We'd been out of college, and I'd gone to work as a newspaper reporter in my hometown, Sydney, Australia. And he'd gone to work as a labor organizer for a union of mostly black woodcutters in Mississippi. And that was a very stressful job. And also, he realized it was going to be a long slog to change the world that way. So he thought journalism might be a better path. So I loved his left-wing politics, and I loved his tanned forearms. When he came back from spring break, he'd been making a documentary about the woodcutters in Mississippi. Yeah. Gorgeous tanned forearms. So I think that was what really got my attention.
I think forearms are like a huge, you know, barometer for the whole body.
They're underrated, I think.
Underrated, yes. All the way up to the elbow. Men, start fine-tuning your forearms, you know. Well, that's, I mean, so sad, but how wonderful. He sounded really funny. And
he that's what I miss the most, is the humor. He was hilarious. And thankfully, we've still got his books, so the boys and I pull out favorite bits and read them and get a real belly laugh. And so it's great to have that way of being able to connect with him.
And hopefully at least one of your sons maybe has the sense of humor, hoping, maybe.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. My youngest son is absolutely hilarious. My older one too, but the younger one's really, he's quick on his feet.
So now with Horse in the world, what have people been responding to it the way you imagined, or has there been surprising feedback to you? What's it been like?
I've been really grateful for the overall reception, and the only blowback I've had is from the right, which I did not see that coming. But there's so much racism in this country. And so I've been getting, you know, some mail about being fair to the police, and that, you know, I don't want to speak specifically because these are plot points in the book. And, you know, I thought that, you know, I might have trouble from the other direction. So I welcome it. You know, I welcome this discussion.
Do you miss being in this novel all the time, or are you happy to lay it to rest and work on the next?
Oh, yeah, no, I've already finished another project, so.
Oh, my gosh.
It's just a short, it's really an extended essay. That book is coming out in November, and then, you know. No, I enjoy this part, actually. It's really fun to get out and meet readers and booksellers. They're my people, and we've all been stuck alone in our rooms for ages. Well, as a novelist, you're always working alone in your room, but my son just went that way making faces.
Turns out this is family hour on our podcast today, so, you know. Tell me about the book that's coming out in November.
Oh, it's part of a series in Australia where they get one writer to appreciate the work of another. And so I have done one of my favorite Australian writers, Tim Winton, who's nowhere near as well known in this country as he should be.
Interesting. And then what's coming after that?
After that, I can't tell you. It's a project that's very different, and it's another nonfiction project, and I have to go to an island off the coast of Tasmania in order to do it.
Whoa. Okay.
That's all I can say about that one, because it's very much still in an amorphous state. But then after that, I've got another historical novel.
See, there you go. Throwing yourself back into work.
That's right.
At least you're doing something that the rest of us can benefit from.
Well, I hope so, and enjoy, you know, so because I love a good book myself. So it's good to, you know, hopefully give other people the same pleasure that I get when I get lost in a book.
Have you read anything great lately?
Yeah, I loved a book called Sorrow and Bliss by Megan...
Mason. Yeah, that was great. I love that.
It's so unusual because it's a funny book about depression.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then, you know, the last book that just blew my head off was The Overstory.
Mm-hmm.
Powers. I'm still reeling from that one.
Wonderful. I actually just wrote a memoir that came out in July all about my love of books. So
what's it called?
It's called Bookends, A Memoir of Love, Loss, and Literature.
Oh, wonderful.
So, yeah.
I will read it.
It's my homage to all the books in my life and all of that. So
marvelous.
But I turn to writing and reading and work when I am going through grief or loss or stress or, you know, pandemics or whatever. I think it is like it's a PG-rated escape.
Yes.
Anyway, well, I'm honored to have spoken to you. This book was such a masterpiece. I'm so glad I had time to read it and enjoy it and learn so much. And it was like it was such a wow to me. So thank you so much.
Well, thank you very much. I enjoyed talking to you.
Thank you.
And me and Sadie.
And Mateo.
Mateo.
Mateo the monkey. All right. Take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Thanks for listening to this episode of Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books. Don't forget to follow me on Instagram at Zibby Owens and at Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books. Also sign up for my newsletter at ZibbyOwens.com and sign up for my virtual book club and meet lots of authors on Zoom every other week. Thanks so much to Steve and Ryan at Texture Sound for the sound editing. And thank you to Morning Moon Productions for providing this fantastic intro and outro music.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.